The original idea behind CoreWave was to collect data, analyze it, and automate it. And that's part of our logo that has the tip of the queue as analysis. And then we have collection, analysis, and automation all in one platform.
Guided by over 25 years in the data and research industry and assisting innovators with investment banking and advisory services, Seema Vasa brings you Data Gurus, a leading market research podcast that offers actionable insights for business acceleration and value creation. Join her as she speaks with key innovators in the space to bring you up to speed with the current state and the future of data analytics and data ecosystems. This is Data Gurus. Need support on your market research projects? Paradigm Sample is a full-service market research solutions provider. Whether you need help with questionnaire design, survey programming, or online data collection, we are ready to assist. Paradigm can do as little or as much as you need, saving you time so that you can focus on insights. Learn more at ParadigmSample.com.
Welcome to another episode of Data Gurus. I'm excited to welcome Armin Ashraghi, who is the founder of CoreWave. Welcome, Armin.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice that we can make the time to do this. You have such an interesting background, and even your current business is really interesting. I've really gotten to enjoy prepping with you and now making this episode live. So thank you. Before we dive in, traditionally, I have people on the podcast that are probably core in primary data collection, some secondary data collection, technologies and tools that enable generating that insight. And what I find really interesting is that your business, although I had not heard of it before, really complements a lot of the work that we do in the data and analytics space, particularly for these companies that are SaaS oriented and really driving subscription revenue and keeping up with customer needs. So with that as such a long background, I just wanted to ask you if you could just give people a general sense of what does your company do?
Sure. So CoreWave is 100% OEM business. It focuses on external users' use cases, and it provides embedded business analytics. Now, all the words I use are just different interpretation of each other.
That's meaning true.
That when I say embedded business analytics, people who are familiar with that know that it by nature it's OEM business. Yeah. And also people know that it's really focusing on external users' use cases.
Yeah.
Meaning that if there is a SaaS application out there, then the SaaS application normally has part of it is the business analytics part of it that gets the data out to end users or to business users or power users or super users. So interactions with other users. And then that part is either buy or build normally, meaning the company may go ahead and just say, I will build it myself, or they may come to a player like us, like CoreWave, that is specialized in providing that as an OEM, an embedded solution and technology to take it and just add it to their application, to their product, to enrich their business analytics capabilities and then shorten time to market and provide their users the world-class capabilities that they would expect.
It's fascinating. And I'm going to dive more into that because I think once we go deeper in terms of the things that you guys can handle with your product, many companies will realize that there are other solutions out there than just having to build it on their own. But before we go into that, I like how you segment the market, right? In terms of data and analytics, there's two segments. There's the external piece, which you were talking about, where clients are really, you know, companies are looking to better serve their external stakeholders. But there's also this internal piece, which is an area you don't focus on. Can we just speak a little bit about what are you seeing on the internal side of data analytics and what tools are people potentially using internally?
Yeah, so what you have seen during the last 20 years, the internal use cases that you are just serving users within your organization. And before I go there, I should provide you a little bit of context that why it matters. really matters, because when you are targeting your internal use cases, your internal users, there is a better chance that you probably know exactly what they want, because they are your employees, their users,
yes,
versus the external users use cases, that by any customer you sign up, there is a tenant added. And depending on the size of the new customer, there might be new requirements that you never knew. So it's more known territory when you target really internal. And besides, it has less complexity from security model, from multi-tenancy perspective, from many other aspects. It's more manageable.
Yeah.
And if you have 20 users internally, or you have 2,000 users internally, when it's internal use cases. And then we realized during the last 20 years that many of these products that came to market, like Tableau, Microsoft came with Power BI, Amazon, AWS released QuickSight, and Looker was there. So many of these products really targeting all of the internal use cases.
Internal.
And then for one or the other, companies had different options to choose one versus the other. Normally, the licensing is per user. So as they add more users, then they can pay more. So it's easy and it's less expensive to start at the beginning, because they may not have all the users. And then as they add more users, they can pay more. So the vendor was happy to scale that way, the revenue. The buyer was also happy to just start easier and then grow with them. The functionalities that they expected was mostly visual analytics with some data sources that started with rows and columns. That's the most common, easier data source you normally target. And then some companies came and said, we also natively support the cloud data sources like Looker.
Right.
And still we are working with those kind of databases that are SQL compliant, but we can now work with the Redshift type of world and Snowflake and these kind of things. But yeah, normally those are the kind of vendors in the market for internal users use cases.
I also think when you work internally, there's a little bit more flexibility, right? If I wanted to serve my needs 100%, although I'm not sure if anything serves a person's needs 100%, but let's say over 90%, a company can look at it and say, I'm making that investment for 10% of it, I don't think we need it. This is good enough. And there's no threat of competition saying, here's another company who can do what you need, because it's all internally based. I don't know what you think of that, but that's being on the corporate side at IBM. I just remember those conversations saying, no, this is okay. We can get what we need from here. It's not the best user experience, but we'll be okay.
You're absolutely right, because those are your own people. You have more control over internal users versus when you are selling your product externally to other companies, you have no control over what they do and how they want to work with the product and what the kind of process might have. So all of those kind of unknown things and zero control over them, you're absolutely right. Internally, at least, not only you know better, but also you have some control to change sometimes, you know, some of the things on your side to make it a better fit to this type of analysis that you want.
I'm going to start with some very basic questions as it relates to now the external users. When you are trying to, you know, you have a product, and many times I've seen this, people have an internal product that they want to take externally. And that shift is so dramatic and underestimated in terms of what the requirement is to go external and be able to serve those needs. And I'd just love it if you could share, you know, what are some key considerations people really need to think about? It's not like you wake up one day and say, okay, we're going to go now sell this externally on the market.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes you have a change architecturally in the product. Sometimes there are some features that you are adding to the product. Adding features is like you have a hotel and you are adding more rooms to your hotel.
Right.
Versus architecturally, it's like you have a hotel and all of a sudden you decide to use that building as a hospital. It's not necessarily, I mean, I haven't seen really architectural changes happen successfully within any software product, because they are very rooted into many things like DNA of the team, like
right.
the overall market that you are serving, and many other things that are really very essential. And not super easy to change those versus adding features. So you changing from internal use cases to external use cases, it's really an architectural change. Now, the internal use case, you can look at it as one tenant, and it can be counted as a subset of the capabilities that you provide. So for somebody who has architected the product, to serve external users. Then coming back and say, I want to use a subset of those capabilities to serve also the internal users, mm-hmm. that's doable. But I haven't seen the other way around. And honestly, you see a lot of gray hair here. And my previous, you know, life, I learned it during the previous companies that yeah. it was one of those people that underestimated the external users' use cases and said, you know what? I don't see the difference. I'm going to build a BI product and then right. I'm going to sell it to everyone. And then after some time, I realized that I'm the biggest competitor of myself. Right. Competing with myself on the roadmap, on the resources, and I cannot really be excellent in either case because right. I'm focusing on internal and then I'm trying to really also create something for external use cases. And that way, really, I realized that if I wanted to really serve that kind of external use cases, that, as I said, it's different because of the security model different. Right. It's different because the licensing is different. The pricing has to be different. The way you support your customers is totally different. The way you train and onboard them and help them to go to market is different. Mm-hmm. They wanted to monetize what you are offering to them versus on the internal use case that they wanted to really use it as a tool and as part of their expenses that they have, right? So it's a kind of, from many aspects, really different role.
When you think about helping companies launch their product in a more aggressive manner, what are the considerations that they have to think about? You said multi-tenancy is one, right? If you had to kind of create a checklist, what are the things that you really want companies to understand that they have to consider when they go about doing this? Not taking an internal case to make it external, but literally, I have a product. My main mission is to monetize this in the industry. What would you advise them to think about?
Yeah, some of the things that I have seen as sometimes afterthought, and they may not think about it at the beginning, but it may come a big hurdle at the end.
Right.
For example, is deployment model. Right.
Okay.
So how do you, for example, let's say you have hundreds or thousands of customers, you are a SaaS company, and then all of a sudden you realize that what you built with a simpler kind of tool that was very good for what you wanted to do for that particular use case, now you right. want to replicate it and just have it for all of these customers and upgrade and downgrade, and each one might have a different plan.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there is a new dashboard that you want to launch or a new feature that you want to add, and just pushing that upgrade to all of these customers, it becomes a kind of very, if not impossible, very difficult task that requires a lot of programmers to sit down and write the scripts and test it and right. check it and how to really push this outside. And if you are using, for example, a SaaS solution for that external kind of vendor, then what about the data privacy? I'm
right.
pushing my data to that kind of service now. Do I have the permission from my customers? Is their data I'm sending to somebody else? So there are, you know, a number of things that all of them, to me, it's part of the deployment that okay. really are done. It's not about really developing the dashboard you need mm-hmm. or creating the workflow or the data pipeline you need. But at the end, you are done with all of that. How do you want to deploy it? How do you want to maintain it with hundreds of customers? Have you thought about it? Because that normally becomes a very, very complex problem to solve if you have not architected well.
So true. So true. I've seen many platforms where companies say, my existing client likes this version of the platform, but I have these all these enriched features that I want to deploy to the rest of my customer base. How do I go about doing that? And then I noticed that so much of it then is human-based, right? You have your customer support, you have your account managers who are then now almost layering in additional costs to the software or to the platform because of that communication that is so difficult to have when there's not a systematic deployment process. I would say technology is easy. It's the people that use it that have to understand all of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about specifically your platform. I'm fascinated to the level of detail that it gets to in terms of supporting SaaS platforms. Just give us an idea of some of the, I know one of them I really liked, you could change the graph. You can, somebody can actually make the different colors based on what they want, but I'll let you, you're going to do a better better job telling us more details around it.
Sure. There are different aspects to it, but let me look at it from another angle. Let's talk about different type of users.
Okay.
We have super users or developers.
Yeah.
And they are normally very instrumental at the beginning to get the connections in place, yeah, to set it up, to embed it, infuse it within your own product.
Right.
A lot of things that need to be done at the very start. And these particular group of people that might be the not minority, probably a small group normally in organization, but very essential for them to have the flexibility and power to really get that done in the right way. If they need to create a metadata, if they need to define the data, integrate the data, all of that. And then you go to the power users, and they are really people who are very comfortable with, for example, a spreadsheet. They know the business. They know the data, but they are not coders. They are not really supposed to really. And we provide some kind of no-code capabilities to them that they are really using in order to make a lot of things happen, like building the whole dashboard, the whole workflow, defining all of these metadata and data definitions if needed, a lot of definition configurations as needed. And they can really get all of those done and change it at any place, at any point that they need. Now we go to the very end users, and those end users, we define them as type of users that even a spreadsheet might be a little bit challenging for them to work with, because probably they are expert in other domains. If I'm a physician, if I'm an accountant, if I'm someone who's really doing my job, but it's not necessarily my expertise is not to work with a spreadsheet. And if you ask me to click more than 5-6 places to get what I want, that's fine. But if I exceed a certain number of clicks, it can get really confusing and I may not remember it, because that's not supposed to be every week. If I go there, I just practice that, right? So the software needs to provide enough for each of these layers in order to be successful. If we provide the technology and developers love it.
Sure.
When it gets to no-code capabilities, then yeah, it falls short. It doesn't do what it's supposed to. It doesn't give that power to power users.
Right.
Then it's not going to really do the job. Or it's great for power users and developers, but end users can't do anything with it.
Right.
And I assume that self-service capabilities are not going to be satisfactory. So then user adoption will suffer. So users are going to adopt it. And then at the end of the day, nobody will use it. So building a platform that can really go to different levels, and on the API side, and it's super powerful and 100% API based, and developers feel like I can do whatever I want with it. And when I say API, I mean programmatically and automatically getting things done, rather than I have to go through the user interface to make everything done, and versus, you know, the power. So to me, that's really the way I would look at any platform in the market and see if I'm a super user or developer, can I get satisfied with all the power I get and flexibility? And if I'm power users, what do I get? And if I'm end users, what do I get? And I look at different, through those different lenses, and see each one, how does it look like? Is it a really perfect picture? And I get the power and flexibility. Of course, everyone would ask for some flexibility on the look and feel, that I can really change it the way my software works. They will look at extremely flexible environment so it can fit into my security model. Not everyone uses the same security model. Not everyone uses the same data model. There are different use cases. You may use data, for example, for your log file to analyze it. And it's different if you are using it against your survey data to analyze it. And it's different if you are using that against your data that is mainly the use cases time series analysis. So there are different use cases. Is it flexible enough? I can really. And if it's not flexible enough, that means you're asking me to change my kind of data a lot in order to fit it. I want to minimize the changes on my side so I can get this technology there and integrate it and make it work. It still may not guarantee that everything 100% is fitting into what I do, but it's a matter of, is it more flexible or less flexible, right? So I can use it and I can use it more. Some other aspects that is very important, for example, data, as each of the tenants may have some user-defined columns.
Sure.
So your tenant number one may have file fields, data columns, data pieces, attributes that they really care about it, versus customer B or tenant B may have some other And how do you manage all of these? Because then you are building one dashboard and you're adding to your product. You wouldn't know about those user-defined columns.
Right.
If you have hundreds of customers, how can you ever scale in order to satisfy that? So a product and platform like Corvée, we have the auto-detect capability that you have the right to turn it on or turn it off. But if you turn it on, what it means that it will give the auto-detect capability to your customers. So when they add those columns, it can be detected by our technology, and then they can go ahead and define it and immediately use it in their charts and dashboards without you and asking. This is one of those examples that shows, for example, the usability of, again, external user use cases versus when it's internal. You already know those user-defined fields, and do you already have included those into your dashboards and everything?
And what a great way to have a conversation with a client when they turn it on and you look at their definitions, and you can actually proactively say, hey, listen, I saw that you did it this way. You might consider X, Y, and Z, versus waiting and not maybe sensing frustration, but not really knowing why there's frustration. That's fantastic. Let me ask you, as you relate to the user segmentation, a really incredibly valuable perspective. Do you believe that every platform needs to service those three stakeholders per se, or is it quote unquote depend?
The more simplistic the solution is, the less needs would be. So it depends. Not everyone needs a supercar. Some people may go with bike and just get everywhere they want because they're in the downtown and everything is two blocks from them or walk there. So I wouldn't say that everyone, every organization, any technology should provide that. But as soon as you get to external use cases, I would say that's a must-have.
You do. Okay.
So if you are really serving external use cases, I don't see a way that you can say, I don't need to really satisfy all three layers. Well, I can just go and focus on one.
Yeah.
I don't know how it can be satisfied.
And ultimately, I also think about it, like, let's say the end user who might not want to do more than five clicks, then where do they go for help? They have to go back to the power user or even potentially IT to say, help me understand this. And if you don't have buy-in from all those other stakeholders or even familiarity, it's very difficult to serve them. Then it becomes with the company and the end user.
Exactly.
Which is a massive lift.
Exactly. And honestly, I would be the first to admit it's not easy. It takes time. For us, it took many years. And we come to Corvée with another experience we had at Logi Analytics, my previous company. Yeah. So it's like you already have had the luxury to live once.
Yes.
And then somebody came to you and said, do you want to live twice? And you said, yeah, give me another chance. And then and before even Logi Analytics, I created some other products. So it comes from some other kind of experience that got us here. And still, we are adding more and more every quarter to make the product better. So I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's doable. And we are, I think, getting to the point that the products are getting better in general. And they are, and I think for external use cases, this is really one of the things that I think will differentiate the product that is useful versus some products that are not that useful.
I'm taking a slight tangent here. It's not even a tangent. I think it's an important learning for many. You've started other companies and successfully have sold them. But I was refreshed by the idea when you saw opportunities in previous companies for technology evolving and shifting, instead of pivoting your company, you said, I'll make a list. I'm putting it in my own words, but I'll make a list for the next time. I'll start from that point versus trying to pivot my existing company to chase what I say is the next cool technology.
Exactly.
Is that a fair way to summarize that?
Exactly. Yeah. And it goes back to the discussion we had earlier about the architecture changes.
Yeah.
Because at one point, you really realize that you need the different architecture, right? Yep. And then you get educated. So my very first company, when I started at the age of 18, it was when MS-DOS was out. And then we wanted to create something on that platform and operating system. And then it was the age of Windows when I started the second company, one of the early companies provided a product on Windows. And then the third one, when XML came to market and data became part of internet. And it was 1999-2000 when I started Logi XML back then and later renamed to Logi Analytics. And the fourth one, when microservices and serverless technologies introduced by AWS. Yeah. And at any given point, you see that this underlying change changes can really make a big difference. Now, my experience with my previous company, when I looked at different reasons that why we lost so many opportunities, like any business, then we get at six buckets. And we said, these are six buckets, six main reasons that many of these big opportunities we could not satisfy. The company was successful and had thousands of customers, but it's still, there were so many big opportunities that I wanted to secure and I couldn't, because I had those limitations. And we looked at those six buckets. We said, okay, now based on this new wave of technologies and serverless and microservices and AWS as an operating system, instead of just using it as a cloud and just using all of those great services available to us, we looked at those six buckets and we said, we can really address all of those.
Right.
Had these available to us. Is it easy to really go to an existing customers, it's existing business, existing software vendor like Logi Analytics or any other company, and go there and just, you have established customers, plenty of them, and then you have a very mature, established product, and then go ahead and change it and just bring up this new innovation? We didn't think so. We thought that if you create really such a product, it's much easier to build such a thing as a startup rather than be part of a very established business. And then everything we wanted to do, it takes months to meet with people. Sometimes it takes over a year to just initiate a process and a project. And versus a startup that you can really quickly make a decision, you can really be fast in doing that. And that was the reason that I thought starting Curvey is a faster pace to get where we want to be.
It definitely speaks to innovation models, right? And within, I'm not saying you were a large corporate, but you had a sizable exit with each of your companies.
Yes.
And a couple of things come to mind, focus, right? And also, how do you think about innovation if you are in one of those larger companies? And it's almost like creating teams that are completely unhindered by the core business so that you can invest and let them go build whatever they need to build. Otherwise, it's serving two masters and it's very difficult to do.
Exactly. Unpredictability is part of the innovation.
Yeah.
And when you grow as a company, you already have passed that stage. It's like you are not a baby anymore. You are not a kid. You are not a teenager. You are now a grown up. Everything in your life needs to have some kind of plan. You're
sure.
Not supposed to get out of the home and say, I have no idea where I would end up end of the week. That's the way you should behave. And then all of a sudden, in order to be innovative and have all of that imagination, now you need to get back to your kind of earlier age and then start wandering around. And then that's much better if you had a second life and third life. And as an entrepreneur, you can have it. So I'm so glad about it.
It's fantastic. I've thoroughly enjoyed hearing about your journey and also learning more about your company. Am I saying it properly? You say it.
I would say it's Curvey. It's rhymes with survey. Survey meaning collecting data. The original idea behind Curvey was to collect data, analyze it, and automate it. And that's part of our logo that has the tip of the Q as analysis. And then we have collection, analysis, and automation all in one platform. And that's Curvey, that rhymes with survey.
Thank you so much. You said it much better than I did. So I appreciate that. And I look forward to keeping in touch and I wish you much success. And you're already successful in your past endeavors and obviously in your future ones as well.
Thank you very much, Sima. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you for listening to the Data Gurus podcast brought to you by Infinity Squared. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Tired of market research solutions that put your project in a box? At Paradigm Sample, we approach market research support with customized and consultative solutions. Whether you need help with questionnaire design, survey programming, or online data collection, we're ready to assist. Let us know your needs, and we can customize a solution just for you. Learn more at ParadigmSample.com.